The person who started the VR revolution is finally separated from the company he founded. Plus, Persona 5 is a Bobby Blackwolf mode, but they don't want me to share it with anyone. Tonight is April 2nd, 2017, and the Bobby Blackwolf Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Everybody's like, there's something else on TV tonight. Why are you doing a show tonight? And I'm like, there's nothing else on TV tonight. It's not actually on television, so it doesn't matter. But, you know, I've gone up against other things before, so whatever, Mania. Hello, everybody, and welcome to edition that nobody's listening to, I guess, of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. You're joining us live tonight, which is apparently the Walking Dead season finale. That's what we're going up against, but I'll be done by the time the Walking Dead starts. You can head on over to our chat room. It's at live.vognetwork.com. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. And if you are participating on the site, you can check in and get some points on the April Fool's leaderboard, which is not Tiger Claw is winning the April Fool's leaderboard. But you can check in just like SSJ100 Matt and Dark Tetsuya, who checked in at some point during the intro. But I do also want to give a special mention. I know that Hitstun, who is in chat, wanted to check in, but we're having some account problems. Unfortunately, we didn't know about the account problems until 7:59 p.m. Eastern, and so I can't look into it right now. Sorry about that, Hitstun. We'll get you fixed up afterwards, and you should be able to check into OLR. But because he probably would have checked in, and I would have read his name. So, yeah. A little bit later on, I am going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Skype line is Bobby Blackwolf Show. This is all one word, or toll-free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1. Or you can comment on this episode at vognetwork.com. And by the way, if you are listening on the podcast feed, there will be a passphrase that you can use to check in at some point. You'll hear at some point during the episode. Put that on the site, and you get the exact same amount of points and love. So the first thing I kind of want to mention... I just realized I wanted to talk about this, and I did not write anything down about it, so I don't have a link for it. For the past couple years, actually, I think this is like the fifth one. So for the past 4 years, I've been going to a computer event here in the metro Atlanta area, which, by the way, I live nowhere near where the freeway collapsed. That is like I'm like. That's northeast. I live northwest of Atlanta, so I can't remember the last time I've driven over that section of freeway, so it doesn't really affect me. I work from home anyway, so I don't commute to the city. But I'm nowhere near the fire. I'm fine. Everybody I know is fine. Biggest collapse Atlanta has seen since February 5th. So anyway, there's an event called the Vintage Computer Festival, and this goes on all around the country, but... this one is the southeastern version, and it's usually been the end of April, early May, since its inception. It's actually in an old CompUSA, and if you want to see the kind of stuff that goes into it or that you can find there, you can actually go to our YouTube page over at Vogue Network. I actually did a Sights and Sounds video of the Vintage Computer Festival and actually went there and interviewed some people that were there. And it's kind of neat to go through there because it's a lot of people showing off like really old stuff and a lot of their personal collections. They've got a soldering area for kids because that's the best thing to do with kids is give them a really hot gun and have them like do things with and melt things with it. That's great. But it's all supervised. It's all really good. They also have like talks and presentations and stuff like that. And I've been going kind of as an attendee for the past couple years, and we've actually talked about here on the show, on this show, that I've talked every once in a while about my mid-90s PC setup, which is vintage nowadays. I mean, we're talking, you know, this is over 20 years old. So I decided, hey, maybe I can try, because I realized that mid-90s is a little bit late for what the Atlanta Historical Computing Society is going for. It's not exactly the history they're going for. They're looking really for 80s and earlier. So I knew it was kind of a long shot, but I decided I'm going to submit an exhibit and see if they accept it. Spoiler alert, they accepted it. So this year, and I will probably do filming a video for Vogue based on this, my exhibit is titled Premium Sound of the 90s PC. So basically, I'm taking my 90s era PC, which still works, which is why it's a unicorn, even though people probably like, oh, I had that PC and whatever. Basically showcasing the premium sound options that were available in the 90s for people who were lucky enough to have them. So I have the two facets of it. Is I've got a Gravis ultrasound card in it, because you actually needed sound cards at this time. I'm going to be running a lot of the early demos, the PC demo scene, which is primarily based in Europe. But like, you know, Second Reality by Future Crew, which was from 1992, showcasing 3D graphics and stuff, and basically making the computer do things it shouldn't have been able to do. You look at it today and it looks like a really bad PlayStation 1 game. But back then, it blew everybody's mind, and it had this sampled music. And so it was realistic music, and it just blew everybody away when they first saw it in 1992. And so I'm going to be running a bunch of stuff like that. But I'm also taking my Roland MT32, and I'm going to be taking a lot of the early 90s Sierra games that utilized the Roland MT32 for the sound. So you're playing like EGA-style graphics, 16-color graphics, but you've got this full polyphonic MIDI sound coming out of this machine, this little box that at the time was like $400 or $500, and my parents didn't want to buy it for me, so I bought it for myself on eBay about 10, 15 years ago. So basically, I'm going to be spending the weekend kind of showcasing that stuff, and it's probably going to be one of the newest technology exhibits at the entire festival, but they accepted it. So the weekend of, and I know it's the last weekend of April. So it is at like April, I'm going to have to pull up a calendar here. I probably should have done this before. Live radio, ladies and gentlemen. April 29th and 30th in Roswell, Georgia. And I will find the link and put it in the show notes at vognetwork.com. It's also got like the Apple pop-up museum, which actually has like, and you can see some of this in the video as well, where there's, you know, a whole bunch of Apple memorabilia, like the first Apple One board, and it's like there's police presence there to secure this motherboard. So, you know, the police actually sit there and watch people going in that room. It's a fun way to spend a couple hours over the weekend. So if you are in the Atlanta area, you know, avoid the bridge collapse and go up there that weekend, and I will be there. They're probably going to put me on a podcast panel. I typically have done a podcast panel the past couple years there. And it's going to be fun, and I'll shoot a video about what I'm showing. And the thing that I did today to prepare for this I went into my closet, and I'm like, hey, there's that old monitor. And you never know what's going to happen when you start pulling out old stuff out of the closet. But one of the things that a lot of the early PC demos did in the 90s was they – all throughout, and basically a demo is, think of like a 3D benchmark today. That's what a demo is. So it's not playable. It's not a playable demo like what you download on Xbox One or PS4 or PC or anything like that. Think of it more like the 3D Mark benchmarks or whatever the 3D benchmark, where I think Final Fantasy 14 had a couple of these benchmarks where you would download it and it would just basically tax your computer and just basically try to show you visuals and audio and stuff like that. And that's what they were. It was demonstrating the coding abilities and the artist abilities and the musician abilities of the creators. So what they did is they would change the resolution that they were outputting all the time during what they were doing. So like this, the first segment would have a certain resolution, and then they would change the resolution, change the color palette and all that stuff, because they were working on VGA 256 colors. Well, on modern-day LCD monitors, like the ones that you have on your desktop. Whenever you change resolution, it takes a couple couple seconds for it to render, figure out that new resolution. So it would blank out, and your monitor would go blank for a couple seconds, and then it would come back up, and you've already missed some of the effects. Old school CRT monitors did not do this. It was instantaneous, just because of the way they were designed. So I actually found like my old, like a 15-inch CRT monitor that was in my closet, and I plugged it in, and it's still crisp and clear, has all of its colors. It's great. Fifth Dream, I almost said a couple of weeks, and Fifth Dream says that's right sometimes. Maybe, depending on how bad your monitor is. So I actually have like my authentic, the same monitor I had in the 90s, still works beautifully, even though it probably hasn't been turned on in 10 years, and it works really good. Basically the only thing like I've got to find left is I got to find what computer speakers I want to take, because I don't want to dismantle the ones I've got on my desktop now, but that may be an option. But I've even got like an old keyboard. I've got to clean the keyboard a little bit, but an old keyboard, because it doesn't have USB. There's no USB on here, so none of my USB mice or keyboard work on this thing. Hitstun said, I like it when a few games did Demoscene-y stuff like Prehistoric Man on Game Boy and Project S11 on Game Boy Color. Some id games probably qualify as Demoscene-y as well. Yes, id and Apogee, actually, because Apogee borrowed heavily from the Demoscene. But id did as well. Epic Games also, because that was also kind of Apogee, became Epic Games. So much so that the original Unreal used the same Demoscene music files. They didn't go MIDI. They actually went full Demoscene for the original Unreal. I'm excited about it. Like I said, I am going to shoot a video, probably get, you know, some kids' reactions or even some adults' reactions. And it probably will be one of the most recent exhibits there, although there has been another podcast, and I can't remember what the name of the podcast was, but I interviewed them in the video, so you can look at them in the video. And they show Marathon on the Mac, which I believe was late 90s, as you know, one of the first big games that came out on the Mac. And I believe, because I know Halo was kind of the spiritual successor to Marathon, so they're late 90s, so I'm kind of in the same area as them. JD says, I remember Apogee shareware games. That's my early childhood. Trying to get the sound cards to work correctly was a pain, especially in the Windows 95 era. Thankfully, this is not Windows 95. I'm running MS-DOS 6.2.2. It does have Windows for Root Groups 3.1.1 on it, but I only use that if I need the network card, because you can actually share Windows 7 drives with a Windows 3 for Work Groups 3.1.1 machine and transfer files that way. So, yeah. And Dungeon Buster says, yep, good old IRQ settings. Yeah, I actually have I actually have the DOS menu. So, like, you could actually do this where when you booted your computer, you could actually select what autoexec.bat and config.sys you used. Hey, I'm getting technical here. One of them is, like, this one loads the CD, you know. The one that I use for the demos, I want all the memory I want. So I don't load the mouse driver. I don't load my CD-ROM driver. I don't load any of that stuff. So I have, like, all the memory, and I've got high mem running, so all the memory goes to those demos. But if I want to play, like, a Sierra game or whatever, I want the, you know, if I can find a good PS2 mouse that I can use on it. I want the mouse driver, I want the CD-ROM driver, I load other drivers, which take up more memory. When I was using this computer regularly back in the 90s, I had, like, 6 or 7 of those menu options, and every time I would, you know, hit Control-Alt-Delete and, you know, reset it, I would choose which one I wanted. So I'm excited. The Vintage Computer Festival Southeast 5.0, I believe is what it's called. I believe it's 5.0. I know it's Vintage Computer Festival Southeast. It is being put on by the Atlanta Historical Computing Society, and I will be there April 29th and 30th of this month. It's already April. So speaking of games coming out here in April, I wanted to call out a game. I enjoyed this series. I have never completed a game in this series, just like I've never completed a game in Final Fantasy. This is Persona, and Persona 5 is finally coming out here in the West on Tuesday. Yes, this Tuesday, Persona 5 finally comes out here. It's been out in Japan since, I think, September of last year. I was reading some reviews of it, because there are some reviewers out there I respect on this subject, one I know personally, and his name is Phil Kohler, and he reviewed it over at Polygon. Great guy. I remember when I was, quote-unquote, his boss, back when he was just a podcaster in college. God, good times. But he reviewed it because he's a huge, and he's a big Persona fan. So I read his review, and he actually pointed out something that I didn't know about. I didn't know about this, they actually implemented Bobby Blackwolf mode into Persona 5. If you haven't been listening to the show, Bobby Blackwolf mode is a term that I've kind of coined because I don't have time to get good at games anymore. I'm getting old. So Bobby Blackwolf mode is the mode of games that insult your intelligence so you can enjoy it. Because I'm kind of done being frustrated with games and having to do the same thing over and over again because I suck at it. I've kind of moved on from that. So I really like Bobby Blackwolf mode. The term came about, if you haven't been listening to the show for a while, it's what I renamed the when we talked to Gearbox Software. If you remember Borderlands 2, they had a DLC character called the Necromancer. And one of the designers actually called it girlfriend mode. Because it's the one that allows you to like not have great aim, and you know, it's basically over. It was basically for the person who sucks at shooters so they can enjoy Borderlands 2. And he called it girlfriend mode, and there was a huge outcry, and people were upset because that implied that girls didn't play games, which is totally not what he was going for. I actually wound up interviewing him. I think I was the only person that interviewed him after then here on the podcast at Dragon Con. He kind of talked about what he meant, why he shouldn't have said it, what the fallout was, and nobody really talked to him after. They just, you know, all called him, you know, public enemy number one. So that's where I renamed it Bobby Blackwolf mode, because I'm okay with being associated with stupidly easy games. And it was Best Friend Forever mode that we renamed Blackwolf Friends Forever mode, as Sky is saying. And Sky even says Mass Effect Andromeda has this mode. So, and I know Mass Effect 3 had the mode, but it's still Mass Effect. And Sky then says, Sky is like my own Dark Tetsuya. Sky's got the Black Wolf Wiki going here. He says somewhere it involved Bobby Black Wolf mode, but the technical name is Black Wolf Friends Forever. That's right. Well, Persona 5 has this mode. They call it safety mode. That's what they call it. And basically what safety mode does is it changes things. So basically you can just enjoy the story. If you die in battle, you just immediately re-show yourself, you revive immediately, and I think let's say easy mode, because it also has easy, medium, hard. Easy mode, the damage you received is half of what it is on normal. Damage dealt is one time, so it's the same as normal. Experience is the same as normal. Money is the same as normal. Safety mode, the damage received is half of normal, but you deal two times damage, you get three times the experience and five times the money. So you can basically, you don't have to worry about the battle. You can just, you know, deal with the relationships, deal with the story, and all that stuff. So you don't have to grind. You can raise all the confidants in one playthrough, which is basically, you know, the relationship stuff in Persona, which a lot of people really enjoy. The only downside is once you select safety, you can't go back. You can change difficulty on the fly if you're playing easy, medium, or hard. And a lot of Persona purists are saying, don't touch safety mode. Just do it on easy. Just, you know, suck it up, buttercup, play on easy. Easy is just easy. And these are people that are playing, like, hard and super hard and New Game Plus and all that stuff. And they're like, oh, easy is so easy. And just because you think it's easy doesn't necessarily mean it's easy for somebody who just wants to play the game and enjoy it. So I'm happy that they're giving the option. You don't have to touch it if you don't want to, but I will. And so, thank you so much for including that. I understand that once you select safety, you can't go back, but maybe if I do that and then I want to do a New Game Plus, which I've never done, I've never played through an RPG twice and I don't know why. I probably should at some point, but if I wanted to, then I could play the New Game Plus on easy and, you know, go up from there and stuff. And I'm sure that they'll disable trophies or something if you play on safety mode. And that's fine, because I used to care about achievements, and now I don't. And Fifth Dream says, I do most stuff on normal unless it's super action-y or has a BS, but there's no shame in easy mode. And Hitstun says, Nintendo does it well with no difficulty settings, but the game offers some help. If you die a lot, Yoshi's Woolly World has a mellow mode as well. Yes, I know we've played on mellow mode a little bit. I still die a lot in Zelda Breath of the Wild, though, so screw that. And Dungeon Buster says, zero shame. You enjoy the game however you want. That's right, and I'm going to enjoy it. He even says, Bayonetta has an easy mode option that automates it to the point where you can play it with only one hand. That's why I like Bayonetta as well. And Kaijuda says, I don't play RPGs more than once, just like I don't watch many movies more than once, unless it's super good or I catch it on TV. Yeah, and also for me, like movies, I stopped buying movies on Blu-ray. Unless I really, 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 really like it and want to watch it again. But I've got like all these movies on DVD that I'm like, I'm never going to watch this again. And but they're on DVD, so like nobody wants them anymore because they're not Blu-rays. Dungeon Bus says, I do normal with every game I play, but I also understand that not every player is in the same way and love it when designers create options like this. And I like watching people stream playing on normal because they can show me that, you know, that they are better than me and I can, you know, maybe get some tips. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen here. I'm not going to be able to easily watch streams of somebody playing on normal or hard and get some tips because Atlas says no. Polygon reports that Persona 5 players will have to resort to other means to share photos from the game as developer Atlas has forbidden PlayStation 4 users from capturing screens or videos using the console's built-in functionality. Atlas confirmed to Polygon that because Persona 5 is such a story-based game, the company made the decision to prohibit players from sharing content. An Atlas representative said, quote, this being a Japanese title with solely a single-player playthrough story means Japan is very wary about it. Sharing is currently blocked through the native PS4 UI, unquote. When asked by Polygon if sharing would be available to players after the game went on sale worldwide, Atlas said that the feature will continue to be blocked. Persona 5 went on sale in September 2016 in Japan and will be available in the West this Tuesday. It's rare that developers block the entire slate of share features for their games. There are some games that prohibit capturing screens or gameplay of certain segments. Previous entries in MLB The Show series disable the use of capturing during loading screens, for example. And also Rock Band 4 is blocked on at least the Xbox One, because that's where I have it. But it's blocked. You can't use their sharing or screenshot taking functionality. Like music games, I can understand because of the licensing issue. So what people have had to do is that they've just, you know, taken their cell phones and taken pictures of the screen or whatever. This is obviously not going to stop streaming because I can just take that Elgato that I use with my Nintendo Switch and just disable the HDCP protection on the PlayStation 4, which means I can't watch Blu-rays until I turn it back on. And then I could just use the Elgato to stream. And just stream it that way. But I can't just hit the share button. And I think this also means you can't use share play. So you can't actually like share play it with somebody else. I'm not exactly sure about that. But yeah, I can understand maybe like blocking cutscenes, because I believe Final Fantasy Type-O, not 15, but the Type-O game, I believe it blocked the cutscenes. But then when you got to the gameplay portions, it allowed you to stream those. And I'm kind of, you know, because I know Persona 5 has like that endless dungeon mode that's, you know, procedurally generated and it's like a side quest type thing. And, you know, let people stream that because there's no story in there to spoil. And Hitstun said, didn't some NBA game allow streaming but disable the game sound? Yes, the NBA games, NBA 2K, whatever, disables the sound and things like that. So. You know, I get it. In fact, the entire reason Super Smash Bros. On Wii U doesn't have a story mode, doesn't have the subspace emissary mode, their entire reason, they said, is because, well, people are going to stream it anyway, so why spend time on it? So I understand that Japan is very wary about the streaming, but a lot of Japanese people do stream. Like, it is a big thing now. You look on Twitch at a different time of day. Like, if you go on Twitch in the middle of the day, or like early, you know, like around noon on the East Coast or whatever, it's all Japanese streams. You'll see a whole bunch of Japanese streams on Live with PlayStation and stuff. So people are streaming their games in Japan. So yeah, so if you want to stream Persona 5, get an Elgato and do it that way, which I might do just to spite Atlas. Now we'll play it on safety mode and I will be proud and all the trolls will show up telling me how, you know, that I need to get good. And I'll be like, I'm not playing Dark Souls. I'm playing Persona 5 safety. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwolf Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase, SHORTS. So the news story I was going to talk about is just to kind of, you know, get everybody to drink tonight, because there's nothing on TV to watch to drink, obviously. And announce or talk about somebody leaving the VR industry for now, even though he created the current resurgence of the VR industry. Even if you don't use Oculus products, if you have a PlayStation VR now or a Vive, which you owe it to this man for that even happening. Because nobody wanted to touch VR. It was a dead technology. We had tried it in the 90s. It failed. We'd probably tried it in the 80s. It failed then. So the only reason it's here is because this man really wanted it to happen. And that's Palmer Luckey. And Upload VR reports that Oculus co-founder Palmer Luckey, the man behind the Oculus Rift concept and the first prototypes, is leaving the company 3 years after selling to Facebook. According to Oculus, this will be Palmer's last week, with Friday, which was 2 days ago, marking his official last day as an employee of Facebook. In an official statement, the company said, quote, Palmer will be dearly missed. Palmer's legacy extends far beyond Oculus. His inventive spirit helped kickstart the modern VR revolution and helped build an industry. We're thankful for everything he did for Oculus and VR, and we wish him all the best, unquote. And I think they also asked, like, so was this amicable? And they're like, we're not going to give any more comment than that. We don't discuss internal matters. Essentially, why I think this happened, well, why this happened now is because you got to realize Facebook bought Oculus 3 years ago. And a lot of times when a company is bought, they they have an agreement with the leadership. And this happens generally anytime a company is bought. And if they want to keep the leadership on, there are penalties for that leadership leaving early. So they want to lock them in to several years, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 years. And if either side leaves before then, there's a penalty. And I'm pretty sure, or I'm not pretty sure, I don't know. I'm speculating that the reason this is happening now is because the penalties ended after the third year. And so they couldn't remove Palmer Luckey's employment until those penalties from the original contract were up. So that's probably why they waited until now. Because we haven't seen or heard that much from him since September 23rd. Now, what happened on September 23rd, I covered this. I really kind of don't. This is the topic that I kind of didn't want to cover last year, or this kind of subject. And so I'm going to kind of skirt around the actual thing that happened and just talk about what happened and some of the reaction. But basically, Palmer Luckey donated some of his earnings, some of his money, about $10,000, which is not a lot for somebody like him. Sorry about that. He donated it to a political action committee. And it was a political action committee that was supporting a candidate that not a lot of people liked, which can mean any of them, but he actually supported the winning candidate. And a lot of people did not appreciate this, even though he did it with his own money, and he kind of did it in secret. He didn't do it as a representative of Oculus, but he was the face of Oculus at the time, and so this caused a problem. So he actually did make an apology and said that, you know, he's sorry if anybody was offended for it. But he said his actions were his own and do not represent Oculus. So we had not heard from him since then, because there was the Oculus Connect conference, which he was kind of always kind of like the keynote speaker. He was showing off all the new stuff. They brought out Mark Zuckerberg. Palmer Luckey wasn't anywhere there. So that was probably public strike number one. January 18th of this year is when he went into the courtroom against ZeniMax. So ZeniMax sued Oculus and Facebook for misappropriating their technology and intellectual property theft and all this stuff. And he was on the witness stand, and basically he was called as a witness alongside Zuckerberg himself to defend Oculus from allegations of intellectual property theft. He answered questions about his relationship with John Carmack, who was a ZeniMax employee before coming to Oculus, and whether or not they violated any agreements with ZeniMax in the early days of the Rift's development. The jury found Oculus had not misappropriated any trade secrets. However, they decided that Palmer Luckey failed to comply with a non-disclosure agreement he signed. Oculus and his co-founders Lucky and Brandon Iribe, who was the CEO at the time, were therefore ordered to pay ZeniMax $500 million as a result of copyright infringement and false designation. Facebook has already vowed to appeal the case, which will likely rage on for years to come. But then basically we didn't hear from Palmer Luckey again until March 30th, when it was announced that it was that he's now leaving the company. So basically, I think it was the combination of both things, where basically he's costing the company $500 million if they can't appeal it. Plus, you know, his reputation with the public, with certain members of the public, has kind of made things already, you know, a lot of people already didn't like Facebook, and then this kind of didn't help. I think they decided it was in their best interest to distance themselves from him. And now they actually can without any kind of penalty because it has been 3 years since the sale. And Hitstun says, you know, I'm totally fine with people being held accountable for their political views. And I completely agree with that statement. I am a fan of the First Amendment, but that doesn't, it's freedom of speech, but not freedom from consequences. All the First Amendment says is that that Congress cannot make a law restricting freedom of speech. That doesn't mean that I have to listen to you because I'm not Congress. It doesn't mean that you can say whatever you want in my chat room at live.vognetwork.com, although I am extremely lenient. Doesn't mean that you can say whatever you want there. Hitson says, I wonder if he tried to defend himself. If he had reasoning for his views, I'd hear him out. So his statement, I'll go ahead and repeat the statement. So, and it kind of talks about a little bit what he does. So this was a statement he issued on September 23rd. This was all the reasoning of views that he has given. Quote, I am deeply sorry that my actions are negatively impacting the perception of Oculus and its partners. The recent news stories about me do not accurately represent my views. Here's more background. I contributed $10,000 to Nimble America because I thought the organization had fresh ideas on how to communicate with young voters through the use of several billboards. I am a libertarian who has publicly supported Ron Paul and Gary Johnson in the past, and I plan on voting for Gary in this election as well. I am committed to the principles of fair play and equal treatment. I did not write the Nimble Rich Man posts on Reddit, nor did I delete the account. Reports that I am a founder or employee of Nimble America are false. I don't have any plans to donate beyond what I have already given in Nimble America. Still, my actions were my own and do not represent Oculus. I am sorry for the impact my actions are having on the community, unquote. So this was a political action committee, and basically their thing was they were going to take internet memes, you know, with the white impact text over an image and put them on billboards. That's what they were doing, and that's what he funded, and it just turns out that they were doing them in the name of the Republican candidate. So that's what that was. I don't really want to get into a discussion about political action committees and presidential candidates in the election. I really don't want to get into that. This is a 1 hour safe space where we talk about silly stuff like video games and stuff. So, but sometimes it crashes over, and that's why I bring it up here. But yeah, Palmer Luckey, he reignited the VR revolution. I do not think we would be where we are now with VR. The PlayStation VR most likely would not be a consumer product. It would have probably gone the same way as the IntelliRoom or whatever, the room projection system that the Kinect was supposed to have with the Xbox 360, whatever that was called. But it was kind of neat, but it was kind of just like an R&D thing. Sony would have said, yeah, we did this R&D thing, but it didn't, you know, we're not going to put it out for consumers because we don't think that there's interest in it. So who knows what's going to be next for Palmer Luckey? He is like 24 years old, so he's got like his whole life in front of him, but he's also a millionaire. So thank you for starting the revolution, Palmer Luckey, because I really love my HTC Vive and PlayStation VR. I do have an Oculus Rift as well, and I'm actually considering getting the new Gear VR because I've got to get a new phone, and so I'm kind of still going up between Google Daydream and the new Gear VR. Getting a Samsung S8, hoping it doesn't explode on me. We're going to take a quick music break, and then you can call in and talk about whatever you want going on in the gaming industry. If you're excited for Persona, if you've played more of Mass Effect, because I haven't, or anything else going on in the gaming industry. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
Yeah. Mu'andru.
Mubrina.
Mashawi. Nukwaida nanawa dangwa farakrai primali tatichamas.
Babi kwarsnawal prastiha warjamas.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Brenna.
And we're the birds. And when we're not creating new languages for Far Cry Primal,
we're participating with the Bobby Blackwolf Show.
I keep forgetting how long that bumper is. I'm like, that was a long one, but they're speaking Weenja from Far Cry Primal, my college buddies. Sometimes I get to pull in favors with some friends that get in the game industry. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not have to be a buddy of mine from college, but I'd like to hear from you if you are. All you have to do is send me an MP3 with just your voice to bumpers@bobbyblackwolf.com, or you can call the toll-free number and leave a voicemail just on the toll-free number. I do not get voicemails if you call the Skype line directly from Skype. I don't know why. Skype doesn't know why, and they don't want to fix it. But I am now opening them right now. Bobby Blackwell Show is on Skype. That's all one word. Or the toll-free number is 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. But we already have a call, so you're too late. So Bobby Black... Let's see. Has it even started yet? Skype's taking a little bit. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, what's up, Bobby? This is Guy Judo.
Guy Judo, what's up, man?
Not much, man. I just wanted to call to let you know that I picked up a game on... what day was it? Monday or Tuesday, I picked this game up.
Okay.
And I am freaking loving it. I'm very late to the party. I didn't take part when this game was like actually like really big, but I took part now because I got it for like $16 brand new at GameStop.
Okay.
And that's Guitar Hero Live.
Yes.
I freaking love it, man. I remember you spoke about it. I can't remember if you liked it or you didn't like it, but I mean, I'm loving it.
I thought it was better at the time than Rock Band 4.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great, man. I saw some of the reviews before I got it. And people were complaining about the live video, and they didn't like the look of it, and all this other stuff. And I came into it with a fresh pair of eyes, and I'm loving it, man. The stuff that they complain about with the live video, like I don't even notice it. Like I'm
so
into like, yeah. What are you gonna say?
Yeah, you're not looking at it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the parts that I do catch, I mean, it's not as cheesy as they said. I mean, I do admit that the one that they made fun of the most was the one where you're like at a skate park or something, or mm-hmm. there's a guy on a skateboard.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that does look a little cheesy, but I mean, no, I mean, for the most part, I mean, it's a great game. And a funny thing about me is all this time that I've been watching people play Guitar Hero, I even had Guitar Hero on my DS, and I played the demo on my PlayStation, but not with a guitar. I just had the controller.
Right.
So I had some experience with it. I played other rhythm games as well. And for the longest time, I thought that the buttons, I thought you had to press the buttons at the exact time that the, you know, whatever it is, the dot, or in this case with Rock, with Guitar Hero, it's like a guitar pick. I thought you had to press the button as soon as it hit inside the outline. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that basically the buttons kind of represent those dots on the neck of the guitar, and you can hold them down anytime you want. It's the mm-hmm. strum that you have to hit. Yep. I didn't know that.
Oh.
Yeah, so, yeah, when I first played the game, they gave me the Fall Out Boy song.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how the heck did they expect me to play this? Because, like, these notes were just flying at me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there is no way I can do this. So I put it on casual, and I did pretty good casual. And then I watched another video, and I'm like, wait a minute. This person is – they're actually holding the buttons down, and they're strumming with mm-hmm. the tune. And I'm like, let me try it that way. And, like, I actually got, like, 100 on the Fall Out Boy, but only a normal. Like, I don't – I haven't tried Advanced yet or anything, but I'm like, okay, now I understand.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah.
And, you know, I love the Guitar Hero TV.
Because
a lot of times I'll just sit there, and that reminds me, because, I mean, I remember back when MTV played music videos.
Yeah.
And it really, I mean, even, like, the stuff that, like, they'll put in, like, not commercials, but, like, just let you rest for a little bit, and they'll show, like, these, like, you know, a jellyfish and stuff. And it's really reminiscent of MTV2, and they're like, you're watching GH2.
Yeah.
And stuff. But, I mean, I enjoyed that, you know, because instead of what they do is instead of buying songs as DLC, you can either buy credits or you can just play that GHTV.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's random, but it's a lot easier than you, like, what do I want to play? But then you get credits as you play normally, so you can play a song, any song in their library.
Right,
the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much fun, man. I'm loving the live TV as well. The other great thing is I had to get it for the Xbox 360 because I wasn't sure about it. The version for PlayStation 4 was a little bit more expensive. It was only $50.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I was like, well, I don't really know if I'm going to like this, so let me just go with the 360.
Yeah.
And what I liked about it was I haven't had Xbox Live in, I think, over like a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even need Xbox Live to play
Yeah, because all Xbox Live gets you is online multiplayer, which there is none.
Yeah, right.
I actually have it on PS4. It does work. I have it on. It's the only guitar game I have for PS4. I mean, it does work fine over there.
Yep. And one other quick thing, and I'll let you get to the next call. Another great thing about it is the guitar. It plays with all the consoles. All you need is like that dongle, which I don't think they sell it separate, which is kind of bad. But it would be really cool if they just sold the dongle, mm-hmm. and then you can just buy the dongle and just use the same guitar in any system. But I definitely want to go with the PS4 next because I can get two guitars. I'm like obsessed with this guitar, so I want to have three at least.
And also, you know, if because this is what we do, and a lot of people may not know this, is even though Guitar Hero Live doesn't have like a bass track or guitar, it does still allow for a microphone.
Yeah.
So you can plug in any, and even on Guitar Hero TV, so you can plug in any USB microphone or a headset, because I think like the regular controller
even
headset
will work. Even your cell phone.
Yeah.
They don't have it. Excuse me. They don't have it for Android, because I have an Android phone, and I couldn't find the app. But I guess it's just for iPhone, so you can do the microphone with your iPhone as well.
Yeah. So, but like I would be playing the guitar stuff, and I'd give my fiance a microphone, and she'd just sing the songs as we're like sitting there on Guitar Hero TV.
Cool. So yeah, that is cool. I'm not sure if the microphone comes with the PlayStation 4, but I did see an unboxing where this girl had a microphone and two guitars. So
it does. The microphone may actually. I have so many USB microphones from like every version of Rock Band, and they all work among all the other consoles. Like, because it's a standard USB microphone. Like, I could plug it into my PC and it'd work. Cool. So. All right.
Yep. All right, man.
Thanks for your call,
Great
man.
Show. All right, later.
Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. I know ActDev says the dongle and guitar works on any console. I don't. It may or may not. Like, because I thought. I'm not going to say he's wrong, because I really don't know. But I thought, like, the Xbox had different. You had to talk to them differently. I know. Because, like, if you look at, like, Disney Infinity. Or Lego Dimensions or something. If you buy Disney Infinity, which you know is not around anymore, you buy it for because I bought it for PS3, I think, or PS4 or something like that. But that same pad works on the Wii U, which is good because Disney Infinity 1.0 was free on the Wii U store, so that's where I got Disney Infinity 1, and I just don't have any of the toys for it. But But the Xbox, it had its own thing, so you can't use the Xbox stuff. Also, the guitars on Xbox, at least the Rock Band guitars and the way it used to work, is it connected directly to the console. You didn't need a dongle for the Xbox 360, and you don't need a dongle for the Xbox One unless you want to have a little Xbox 360 adapter. That takes up a USB port, but they just connect directly to the console, whereas you need a little dongle on the PS4 and PS3 and the Wii U and stuff like that for it to work there. So yeah, and I think he's clarifying that it's basically the PS3 and PS4 use the same connector, and I'm maybe the Wii U does the same thing, but I think Xbox is their own little special snowflake world. But no, I like Guitar Hero Live. I'm liking Rock Band 4 now after the Rivals expansion. I kind of wish the hardware was better so other people would play it, but I'm liking it more now. It's finally getting to the place where people can buy Rock Band 4, and it's kind of a full game now, which it wasn't when it came out. And Harmonix, I think, has laid off more people, so they're not doing too well right now. But Guitar Hero Live, it's a whole new button layout, so you have to like relearn how to play. But it's a nice breath of fresh air. And ActDef does also point out that Mad Catz is also closing its doors. But they were the ones that made the bad guitars that is why Sky doesn't play Rock Band 4, is because the Mad Catz guitar sucks and keeps dropping connection. And so they switched vendors. And so Mad Catz doesn't supply Rock Band instruments anymore. And nobody's buying DDR mats anymore, which I think is what Mad Catz was originally really known for. It was making the really good DDR mats, I think. But nobody plays DDR anymore. So nobody else is trying to call in, so we're going to go ahead and close the phone lines there. Thank you so much, Kaijudo, for calling in. Always love hearing from you. Coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. Sacramento, you guys there?
We're here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing good. So Mad Catz is gone.
Yeah, kind of a weird end of an era sort of thing, although, to be fair, since we haven't really focused on music gaming for a long time, it's kind of one of those, oh yeah, they were still around, huh?
They made that guitar on Rock Band 4 that doesn't work, which is why you don't play Rock Band 4.
Yeah, in part. It's a big part of it. Well, don't forget that, you know, ironically, we probably wouldn't have a lot of the music games we have were for Mad Catz. So, you know, they had their impact for sure.
Yes. And, I mean, they were kind of instrumental, get it, like with the early Guitar Heroes and stuff, because they really did, you know, they were the ones that made the controllers, and we wouldn't have those games, even though nobody plays them anymore. We wouldn't have them in the first place.
I still remember that E3 where they were showing that off in Kensha Hall. Like, I think that was the earliest version of Guitar Hero they showed there. Or was that Into the Groove they might have shown that year? I don't remember. It has been that long.
No, I remember. I can't remember if it was Guitar Hero 1 or 2. It might have been 1, but I remember as well.
I think it was 1 because 2 was when Activision picked it. Well, right? Was it 2 or 3 and then Activision picked it up? But Activision picked it up and then it went mainstream. And so it was everywhere. It was in the, you know, it was big booth. Room. Yeah, it was. Well, yeah,
Loki.
Which you can actually still find on YouTube on our very ancient Orange Lounge radio channel. I'm talking 10 plus years old, like pre-Vogue stuff, right?
It's so much fun.
Yes, that infamous clip is there too, but you can actually see there's a Guitar Hero review that's Jamie and Loki. I couldn't be there. I don't remember what it was.
They made me hide my Bimani stuff.
I had some conflict. Yeah, that's right. You had to hide all your DDR stuff so it wouldn't be in the shot.
I had actually had Guitar Freaks out because I'd been playing it last night.
It's like you were warming up. So yeah,
we just kept it in the living room because we were playing Guitar Freaks Drumania.
Sure. So it's kind of...
Act Death points out Ragged Octane is who we were thinking of with the early Guitar Heroes, not Mad Catz.
Yeah. I thought Mad Catz was involved.
Mad Catz did some, though.
You're right.
Red Octane was the earliest. Thank
and
you. You're right. See, it all blends together. But I could swear Mad Catz had involvement in the making of some type of peripheral back then that was essential to this whole thing. But anyway, thank you, Act Dev.
And I actually think what happened is I think maybe they were showing Guitar Hero 2, but like the next week or the week earlier was when those companies got bought. And Red Octane was bought by Activision. They owned the Guitar Hero license. And Rock Band and Harmonix was bought by MTV.
Yeah. Yeah, that all happened like in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was like either right before or right after the E3.
You know what?
I was going to say quickly, you know what I know Mad Catz did was the Pump It Up on the Xbox.
Yeah.
That was Mad Catz.
Well, and then, like I said, Mad Catz then kind of helped with, when EA dropped Rock Band 3, I think Mad Catz became the publisher for Rock Band 3, so the splash changed, and then they helped publish Rock Band 4 until the fallout, and they switched vendors.
Right.
You know, we owe a lot to those cheap Mad Catz controllers, but I honestly think that the one to blame is Hori. How dare they put out better controllers? Seriously.
Yeah, no, Tiger Claw even brings up the Tournament Edition fighting sticks. Like, that's what Mad Catz was doing a lot, especially with the esports, and now, like, Street Fighter V's, like, now on TBS.
Yeah, we had some of those.
Yeah. So, are you guys getting Persona 5, or is it still Mass Effect and everything else going on?
Mass Effect.
I think it kind of falls under the I'm too busy with Mass Effect and some other things too that I'm still trying to catch up on. But I'm like, this has always been the case with Persona for me. I'm certainly not a hater. Like, I understand why those games are popular and they're very vast. It's just like literally there are only so many hours in the day. So to ask me for 100 of them for this one game is a lot. I realize that's ironic coming from an MMO fiend, but we like what we like, and I've always liked the MMO stuff.
I have Legion waiting for me.
Oh, that's right. You haven't even touched WoW in a while, which, speaking
like
of MMOs.
Like 2 weeks.
And I've barely touched Final Fantasy XIV, I think, you know, just with Mass Effect.
I downloaded the Tomb of Sargeras patch, which makes me happy because, like, one of my favorite characters ever is now back.
Which I think is funny. Both those games got a big patch the same day. Yeah. Interesting. But anyway, So, I did pick up Persona 4 on the Vita. It was on sale at one point, and I started to play it a little bit. And I see it's a very different type of RPG. It's not like Final Fantasy at all.
Yeah.
At all. It's a very different type of game. You know, very modern, a lot of the settings, and very much influenced by, at least I get a feeling from like comics and, you know, what you see on television and stuff overseas. So, long story short, I would like to check out Persona 5. I just don't know when I'm going to be able to do it.
And
minor spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think listeners tonight will learn a little bit more about where the Persona series came from tonight.
Show spoiler alert.
So also, I think you guys were talking about this because, like, one of the things that you guys came up with when talking about the Nintendo Switch and about them having Netflix, and you guys asked, is it a big deal in Japan? And then this week I see the trailer for, what is it, like Final Fantasy 14 Daddy something or other?
Daddy of Light.
Daddy of Light, which is a television series about Final Fantasy 14 going to Japanese Netflix.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
And it's coming here too, but I'm like, okay, so that answers yes, they have Netflix in Japan.
Yes. I knew they had Netflix over there. I just didn't know, like, what the big, if it was as big of a deal with what's going on, with all the portability stuff over there as it is here. Because that portability, I mean, that's what's been keeping the Vita relevant over in Japan as opposed to here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, but what is it, like, Daddy of Light? What is. Like, do you even know much more about this than I do, or is it just...
I believe it's something to do with a story about a son and his dad that adventure together in the game and have these experiences that they share. And I think it's one of those, like, based on real life type of things, but isn't, like, a reality show. I think it's one of those inspired by real life things. So it's, like, their adventures that they did in the game and kind of how that helps them bond in the real world. Remember, they don't have World of Warcraft in Japan. A lot of people forget that. Blizzard, for whatever reason. I mean, if you go underground, you can find it. But officially, Japan does not have World of Warcraft. So this Final Fantasy 14, the MMO stuff, is a little bit newer for them. I mean, you could go back to, like, Lineage, some of the other EverQuest, Final Fantasy 11, but this is, you know, Final Fantasy 14 kind of is their Warcraft right now.
Yeah, but see, they're also holding Phantasy Star Online 2 for themselves and not sharing it with anybody else.
Yeah, that's not cool. I'm not okay with that.
I'm not cool. Really. So what else are you guys going to be talking about this weekend?
So we have some special guests in the studio tonight. I'm very excited to welcome to the show our pals Gabe and Bree. Literally just walked in. Very excited to welcome them to tonight's show. We're going to be talking about the Sacramento Indie Arcade event. If there are any folks that are listening to your show that don't happen to listen to OLR, which that makes me sad, but I understand. It's a long show.
What are you doing with your life?
Yeah,
look at your choices.
If you happen to be in the Sacramento area, check out next Saturday in West Sacramento at the Convention Center, the Indie Arcade event. You're going to see a lot of talented developers from not just Sacramento, but the Bay Area as well. The Bay Area don't need help. Sacramento needs help. But indies always need help. Yeah. So we're going to be focusing a lot of them.
Some people need help.
Yeah, and us here in studio, we all need help. So we're gonna have a big psychotherapy session tonight.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm not flying out for it this year. Maybe some other time I'll come out for it.
I understand. Well, you know what? This event's just getting bigger and bigger. So I think I overheard Gabe say something like, PAX better watch themselves.
They better.
No, I'm kidding.
They better.
All right.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be here next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for you to join in. I believe what he didn't say is OLR is not going to be here next weekend, but I will still be here. I'll be holding down the fort all by myself. I'm not going to sing the song, but you can sing it in your head. Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. Catch us live. Interact with the show directly. Leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper for using the show on the toll-free number 1-888-36-GAME-1 or email me an MP3 with just your voice to bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf or Twitter @BobbyBlackWolf is where I am on social media. You can also submit feedback on the episode page here at VogNetwork.com. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who doesn't know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. Thank you so much, Dark Sakura, Dark Tetsuya, DC Nate, Hecht, Ronma, Sky, VXJSNXV, Bird, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc978, JD, Shatter Next Gen, Tigerclaw, ActDef, BaconBits, Bowl, Brad from Pod Culture, Dungeon Buster, Funny T Man, Hitstun, Ice P, Kaijudo, Kazan, MXT, Fidre, Originator, Spiffy, SJ100 Matt, who calls it Vogue Mania, True, William Murderface, and Zappy. So that is it for me. See you guys next week. I may or may not have played Persona. I mean, it is a 100-hour game, and I may not buy it, but I'll probably be playing it Tuesday, but not streaming it because they won't let me. Bye.
winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom, although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.